بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. One major hurdle in this path is stray thoughts. At times it happens that the person is moving positively, consistently, and then he is haunted by a whole train of stray thoughts. As a result of these stray thoughts, he feels that he has not achieved anything. All the past of his has been gone in waste. So all these are stupid thoughts, they are wrong thoughts, and it is Shaitan's way to frustrate you. No matter what heights and positions you reach, you will encounter this. Evil thoughts will come, and repeatedly they will come. This wrong thoughts, one is to entertain those wrong thoughts, to bring and entertain those wrong thoughts in your mind. That is not right. That is sinful. You are bringing them deliberately, you are entertaining them, and you are deliberately thinking on those lines. That is wrong. But if they come of their own, without you deliberating over them, without you entertaining them, they have come on their own, then it is not a sin at all. Sometimes it may be actually a reward for you. And the reason why it's going to be a reward for you is that the one person is in the service of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and he's got nothing disturbing him. Nothing that is disturbing him, nothing that is obstructing him, and he's going straight. Right? And the other person is in the service of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with all the obstructions. Yet he remains consistent on the path. So perhaps his martaba and position may be even greater, that in spite of the obstruction, he's still moving on straight. He hasn't turned away, he hasn't been disturbed and disrupted because of these wrong thoughts. It's like two people that are serving the king. So one person is near the king and there's an air condition there. So he's enjoying it, he's looking towards the king. He's not disturbed. His mind is not disrupted in anything else. So he's enjoying the whole thing. And the other person is a little bit further away in the heat. So there are flies coming, there are mosquitoes coming, and they're disturbing him. So in spite of these flies coming and disturbing him and trying to distract him, he still remains focused towards the king. The king is watching. This person is being distracted. He is being disturbed by these fireflies and mosquitoes and whatever else. But all these disturbances and obstructions are not turning him away, not diverting him from focusing towards me. And you can imagine now how much he will be loved by the king, that in spite of all these obstructions and all these difficulties that are on his path, he's still looking towards me. So sometimes the reward of that person who is going through all this may be even greater. So the bottom line is, one is amdan and one is awurdan. One is to bring those thoughts, entertain those thoughts, that's the wrong thing. And one is for those thoughts to come of their own. So that at all is not wrong, is not going to be pushing you backwards, it's not going to take you away from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. One area that we need to guard ourselves against is that unnecessarily we don't look at and we don't go towards areas that will create a disturbance in the mind. If there is a need, Allah will help. If there is a genuine need for you to go, you went, you completed your need and you came away. But if there is not a need, then you don't go to these areas, you don't read this type of books and magazines, etc., that will then disturb your mind. Many a people, they come and ask questions, whether it's through the mail or whether it's over the radio, etc. They ask these type of questions, And these questions come up when they read this type of literature, books, etc., or they encounter such people, then they get into discussions. When they get into discussions, now they are landed with doubts and suspicions about their own religion, about their own deen. So you didn't have that type of immunity and that type of protection for yourself, then why did you get into this discussion? If you had that type of defense, then you went into it, then you would have flawed the person and you wouldn't have had any problem. You would have remained, your composure would have remained, your stability would have remained. But you don't have the security, you don't have the protection. And then you went and risked your iman, your faith. Now you are left with that doubt and you don't know how to heal yourself. You don't know how to find a solution for this problem. So this is important that we don't get into these type of areas unnecessarily. Sometimes you get people coming here and they complain about doubts and serious doubts they have. Sometimes the doubts are in their minds for over 20 years. One person came here and he had a doubt, he was namazi, etc. But he had doubts in his mind lasting over 20 years. Something about evolution, something about Darwin's theory and something of whatever else. But now that thing is sitting in his mind for over 20 years. Where it started from school or the university. Then eventually, then he comes after 20 years, then he takes the courage, takes the pluck to come and discuss it. But now imagine what was the state of his faith for all that period, for that duration. So you don't risk your iman because of these things here. Similarly, you don't risk the faith of your children. Now, you expose them to these type of circumstances, these type of places, their minds have been spoiled. When their minds have been spoiled, they can't come and openly discuss these things to you. And when they can't come and discuss it with you, they are sitting with the problem. Then when some type of awareness and consciousness comes to them, then they want to discuss it. But this interim period all has been wasted. In that period, what were they? They were not here, they were not this side, they were not proper Muslims, and not totally out of Islam. They're still doing the outward practices, but they're in doubt about their own faith. But what brought them to this position, what caused these doubts? This type of institutions, this type of environments, this type of surroundings that they were in, that created those doubts. So, and who sent them to these institutions? We send them. And why we send them? That they may be able to move forward in their lives. So this is why we send them to these institutions. But what have we caused for this child? What have we bought for this child? Have we bought any good for this child? Or we have landed him in problems, serious problems. So these type of fancy thoughts, they create more confusion in the child's mind. Now, in schools you have it now, presently, I don't know if it still remains, but they have something like right living. Then they have a period where they will introduce every religion to a child. Grade 7, 8 child, and every religion is being introduced to the child. Now, he is not in a position where he can absorb all these things here. He hasn't understood Islam fully and completely, and then you're introducing him to Hinduism, Christianity, etc. They're talking about reincarnation. So that is their belief. Like how Darwin's belief was evolution, so these people also came with a philosophy. If Hindus came with a philosophy, then Darwin also came with a philosophy. And both, we know, is flawed. The arguments are totally flawed. Like Darwin, like this Hindu's theory about reincarnation is flawed, then this theory is also flawed. My friend Sayyid Saab, Damat Barakatum, once he says that the principal of Orient School was at his office. So at that time, Sayyid Saab was doing this job lots. You get some parcels and whatever else. Sometimes it's old parcels lying there. So until you find a buyer, then you just have to stack it up. So he's in the office and the principal is there. And the principal had some biased feelings towards Islam. So anyway, whilst they're in the depth of their discussion, one cockroach comes out of those job lots. So the principal rushes to go and tramp the thing, smash the thing. So Sayyid Saab cautions him, Bhai, what are you doing? What are you doing? He says, don't you see this cockroach? So Sayyid Saab tells him, it may be your grandfather. That may be your grandfather. Now that's according to their belief, reincarnation. So now it's laughable. Similarly, evolution also laughable. If this is laughable, this is also laughable. This is a joke, that's also a joke. You know, Allah Ta'ala has blessed us, right? How He blessed us? He blessed us as being from the progeny of Adam alayhi salam. A person comes from Makkah, what do you call him? Makki. Don't you call him Makki? Person comes from Medina, what do you call him? Madani. Comes from Pakistan, you say Pakistani, right? So that Ya at the end comes to show attribution, right? Comes for attribution. A person that is coming from a Quraysh family, you call him Qurayshi or Qurashi, right? Don't you say that? So that Ya is for nisbat, for attribution. So this Ya is commonly used in Arabic, it's used in Urdu as well, just for attribution purposes, right? So nowadays, there may be the need when you are introducing yourself in front of these type of people that, for example, your name is Ibrahim, so you say, I am Ibrahim Admi. Who you are? Ibrahim Admi. Why Admi? Because that Ya is for attribution. I am from Adam alayhi salam, so I call myself Admi. Right? Why you call yourself Admi? Because you're coming from the progeny of Adam alayhi salam. I'm not mixed at all. I'm not mixed about my attribution, my lineage at all. So I attribute myself directly to Adam alayhi salam. So therefore I say Ibrahim Admi. Right? You can be mixed, so you can call yourself Bandari or monkey, it's alright. That is because you are mixed. If you are mixed, doesn't mean you must impose your ideologies and your beliefs onto me. Like the Hindus can't come and impose their ideologies of reincarnation onto you. So why do we only reject, why do we have this type of attitude? We become partial. Hinduism, no, we reject it. But Dawan, we try and embrace it. We write essays upon it, assignments on it. It's a stupidity, really. When you analyze the whole thing, it's something wrong with the brains, see. Sometimes that happens, the person is moving backwards, but he thinks that he's intelligent, he's progressive. He doesn't realize it's a retrogression. He's going backwards, but in the name of education, he's going backwards. In the name of education, he's going backwards. They don't realize it. So what we're getting at is, unnecessarily don't put yourself into these areas which will haunt your mind with doubts, with suspicions. You don't put yourself into areas. One is this, what I explained just now, reincarnation or evolution, right? Both are flawed, both are laughable things. In fact, now they themselves have come to with consensus that this whole thing is not even a hypothesis, it is something someone fabricated just for a name. This evolution thing, just for a name, whatever. Powder he attached to some bones and fossils, and he made it look like prehistoric. Now, after so many doctorates and so many papers were delivered for doctorates, now they came out, no, what happened? This person, just to earn a name, he did this. Now, the rogue, the thief in him, was caught after a couple of good years. But the rogue did whatever he had to do. He earned the name and he went away. So many stupid people got landed with the thought, and they ran the thought in the universities, and they're running it still. But it's proven. There's consensus on this, that this is not even a hypothesis. It is just a fabrication. He just did this just to fabricate. Now why do they have to come with this fabrication? Why do they have to come with this type of fabrication? That's an important question. Why do they have to? You see, when a person turns away from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then he wants to know what is his origin. Like, we didn't turn away from Adam alayhi salam, we didn't turn away from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so we don't need to dig into it. It's one thing, we believe in it, we're born with it, we die with that. Right? So we don't need any further discussion on this, further explanation to this, right? But now they don't believe in Adam alayhi salam, so they had to find out what was their beginning, what was their origins, right? The first thing that went wrong in them is they don't believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. When they don't believe in Allah ta'ala, that they had to start off with the beginning, how it started off. Right? So when they come at this point, how they started off, they can't see Adam alayhi salam, because this Adam alayhi salam's theory comes from Jannat. It doesn't come from planet Earth. They want to start everything from planet Earth. There is no concept like Jannat. Here we're talking of planet Jannat. We're talking of the planet Jannat, not planet Earth. That there, it started off from there, and it was moved on to this Earth, right? So we believe in that, we live with that, and we die with that. Now they don't believe in Jannat, they don't believe in Jahannam, right? When you talk of Jannat and Jahannam, then they just say it's an illusion, see? Right? Unfortunately, sometimes we buy these ideas, and we buy it so heavily, and so dearly we buy it, that we die with these things here. We don't even realize it. Now you hear about a person cremating himself with a Muslim name, right? Now why he bought this type of ideas, when he bought this type of ideas, then he died like this. Kama tahyawna tamutun, he says it very clearly. The way you will conduct your lives, then you will die like that. So your whole life you carried on like this, right? You bought those ideas, you sat with those people, you discussed with these people here. When you discussed with them, you sat with them, you lived with them, then it's not a strange thing that you died like how they died. But if you lived as a Muslim, dressed up as a Muslim, conducted yourself as a Muslim, then the hope in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is that you will die like that. In London, one old woman passed away in hospital. The systems are different there. She died and she didn't have any of her relatives around the time that she passed away. So, as the family was notified, they came to take the body. So one of the nurse, the head nurse, called some of the family, said, "Are you the children of this person?" "Yeah, we are the children. I'm going to show you one note." So the head nurse called these people here, and that note was shown. She wrote the deceased, just a minute or 2 minutes before she could pass away, she called the nurse and she asked her for a paper and a pen. And then she wrote. She wrote there, "See, I lived as a Muslim, I'm dying as a Muslim, and now you be a witness. You are a kafir, but you be a witness that I read the kalima, La ilaha illallah, ashadu an la ilaha illallah, wa ashadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah, and now I'm dying." And as she just completed that, and she died. Now this was something very fascinating for the nurse. Okay, at this crucial moment, and she was so much in her senses, so cognizant of her faith, that she died in this state here. Okay. Umarji Sahib rahmatullahi alayhi explained us that one prime minister of a Muslim country, I'm not mentioning that country now, he lived however he lived, how they lived free lives, not concerned about Islam and deen, mixing around with kuffar and all whatever else, living their lifestyles. So he lived his entire life like that. Now he is hospitalized. When he's hospitalized, then his funeral rites, his death rites, the last people that were there was a whole choir, the church group. They did all those church things, whatever they did, and he died in that state. See? So the way you conduct yourself, you will die up, you will end up like that. Now this woman here, she was sincere. Perhaps they couldn't afford going to a private hospital. They were forced to send the mother to that hospital. But she was sincere. She was good in her faith. She was clear about what she wanted. And most of these simple women, they don't buy all these stupid ideas. First, they don't understand English. I mean, they don't understand English so fluently, so they don't buy into all these type of ideas. So their faith is kept totally simple. As they're moving out, then the faith is clear, the faith is proper, the faith is absolutely clean, untainted, and no blemish on their faith. They're going with iman, they came with iman, and they're going with iman. That the nurses also are shocked, okay, how this woman managed to do this in this state. So this is where we go off. You see, every person, every second, third person feels, well, I'm intelligent, I can read between the lines, and I won't get my faith blemished and tainted. You don't know where it'll come and attack you. Like this person, you know, the person that died and cremated himself, you can't say he was backwards. He was the Minister of Education. So you can't say he was backwards. Then how he became an antagonist? Agnostic. How he became an agnostic? This type of association, agnostic, what do you call it, agnostic? He's got no faith. He's doubt now. He's in doubts. Not here, he's not there. Agnostic, right? Mutaraddid. He's a mutaraddid. He's not there, he's not believing in anything. But how did he land himself in this? Because of this type of association, this type of company, night and day, this type of people, this type of meeting, you're talking, sitting. And what's in your mind? The thing that is in your mind is that, well, let us carry on now, that will take its course. Religion will take its course, that's by the way. And these worldly things are the more important things. These are the issues that we need to attend to. That will come in time. So that time doesn't come, and one thing leads to the other, and the second, and the third. See? Mind you, he was so intelligent, this our Abdullah Desai, from the top masjid. This person here was his classmate, in the same class. But he was so intelligent that although they were at grade 4 at the time, but he could answer papers of grades 8. So he was so intelligent. But where did that intelligence take him? Where did that intelligence... Nowhere. It took him nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. He made a mess up for himself and mess up for the religion that he originally belonged to. It's a disgrace. It's absolute disgrace. Wholesale disgrace. Now what we need to understand is, where did this stem from? Where did this stem from? Where did it come from? This type of association. Ibrahim alayhi salam made it abundantly clear. Innani bara'um mimma ta'budun. Inni bari'um minka wa mimma ta'budun. When his parents and his people, his tribes people, all were not heeding to his message of tawheed. That is to say, I have nothing to do with you people. Not only would what you worship, but even with you people, I have nothing to do. So I have to go on different ways. I will not buy into your ideas. I will not buy into your culture. I will not buy into your civilization. I will not buy into your ways, not into your value system. Nothing of yours. So we say the same. When we come from the same faith as Ibrahim al-Islam, as we are asked to, that فَاتَّبِعْ مِلَّةَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ حَنِيفًا, follow the same path, then we also need to do the same thing as Ibrahim al-Islam had done, that you cut away not only from the person, but from his religion as well. Not only from his religion, but from the person himself. Just it's important work, business, whatever else. You did the business and you moved away. You did the business and you moved away. But now you are interacting, socializing, getting to parties, getting everywhere in discussions, halls, etc., all the time. Then for those colors and those ideas to rub against you is not difficult. It's must rub. At some point it must rub against you. You're moving with a certain class of people night and day, and then you expect those colors not rubbing against yourself. Then is that logical? It's not logical. No matter what class you are, what intelligence you are, but you're sitting with them, you're talking with them, you're discussing with them, you're eating with them, you're socializing with them, you're going to places with them, holidays, whatever, you're going and moving with them, and then you expect your deen to be so totally secure and protected and guarded, then this is something that you're asking that is impossible. Your faith must get tainted, must get affected. Sooner or later, it must get affected. So Ibrahim alayhi salam made it abundantly clear, minka wa mimma ta'budun. I have nothing to do with you and with your religion. Minka wa mimma ta'budun. With you and with your religion. And he went one further. Kafarna bikum wa bada baynana wa baynakum al-adawatu wal-bughda. That we reject you, reject your ways, we reject totally. And enmity and hatred has surfaced between us. And this hatred and enmity will remain perpetually. وَبَدَى بَيْنَنَا وَبَيْنَكُمُ الْعَدَاوَةُ أَبَدًا حَتَّى تُؤْمِنُوا. It will remain, this will remain, hatred, dislike. Are you sitting, socializing, talking, befriending, everything you're doing. The only thing you are separating is Eid. Now, Eid you'll do separately and he'll do his Diwali or his Christmas differently. That's the only thing that you will do differently. Otherwise you are doing everything with them. Then you expect, no, that you will die as a Muslim. Then really, it's a far-fetched dream. Really, it's a very far-fetched dream. So a Muslim has got his own identity. He must preserve it, his ways, his culture, his behavior, his value system, everything. We may be despising this person, but we need to look within ourselves Are we guilty also of this type of values to some extent or not? Are we guilty also? Do we buy into their culture, into their ways? A general question is asked whether the wearing of a topi, is it an emphasized sunnah or not? It's an emphasized sunnah or not? So I generally say, we'll come to that later, whether it's an emphasized sunnah or not an emphasized sunnah. But look at the principle. The hadith says, you love a people, you'll be counted amongst them, right? You love a people, you'll be counted amongst them. Right? So generally, the topi symbolizes who? In fact, in the old days, I remember in the old days, they used to call it a mosque hat. I don't know if they still call it a mosque hat. But they identify with Islam. Mosque hat, whatever. So when a person is wearing that topi, you take him for a Muslim. One person came here, and he complained, you know, when I came all across this, your students, and none of them had the audacity to greet me with Assalamu Alaikum. So I sat him down. Now, person coming from a Western background, you would say the same thing, but you can't tell him like this. You know, that your ear is this. You say right round, to turn around your hand, and tell this is your ear. You can't tell him straight. That's another problem with Westernism. You can't tell the person too straight. Because when you say too straight, then that's being rude. But then, when you get straight to the point, it's clear. Straight to the point, to sat him down, gave him tea, whatever else, made him feel nice. Then I explained to him, but see, you came in this attire. You came with a shirt and a pant. You don't have a topi, right? Do you have anything that symbolizes Islam? You have got anything in your body that symbolizes Islam? No, I got nothing. Then why do you then blame these children for not greeting with Assalamu Alaikum? They can't make out whether you are a Muslim or a non-Muslim. They can't make out. How must they distinguish? And if they do greet you with Assalamu Alaikum, then you will feel, there's a word that they use nowadays in English, I don't know, I can't just get that word now. they feel that as though you are imposing, you know. They feel as though they are imposing upon you, they're imposing their values upon you. So therefore they will not greet you. But if you symbolize, you got a symbol of Islam, you got a sign of Islam in your body, in yourself, right, then they will naturally greet you. One place, there was a Hindu and a Muslim. Hindu had a beard, and he must have come from India or whatever else, and he had a small kurta. Some of the Hindus had come from India. And there was a Muslim, clean shaven, no topi, nothing. So this person brought a wine and cold drink. The wine, he served it to the Muslim, and the cold drink to the Hindu. Now see what a big problem. He counted that Muslim to be a Hindu, and the Hindu to be a Muslim. You see, so he turned the whole thing around because of your appearance. Now imagine what a disgrace, what an insult that people consider you to be a non-Muslim. Is it a respect? Is it an honor that I took you for a non-Muslim just because of your appearance? See? So how important it is that we guard and secure our symbols, those things that symbolize Islam. You know, there was a black student here. So when anybody accepts Islam, so we have the natural curiosity to find out from the person, and what was that attracted you to Islam? It's natural, everybody will ask, whether it's a black man or a white man, whoever else. You accept Islam, then you have the curiosity, you want to know, all right, what was it that attracted you to Islam? So he says, that I remained in prison so long, and then I just liked the Muslim topi, you know. I just liked that. It had an appeal. There was an attraction. I just liked it. So I began to wear a topi. When I wore a topi, then someone greeted me, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So I got curious. Now, what is this? So that man told me that this is the meaning of Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Peace be upon you with the mercy of Allah Ta'ala and His blessings upon you, right? So I was really fascinated. I don't know the man for a bar of soap, and such a lengthy dua he made for me. And this dua was made just on account of my topi. And the topi made him feel that I was a Muslim. So many duas. and he's invoking so many mercies of Allah Ta'ala on me just because of this. So this really affected my heart. So now this rooted in something else. Now the topi from where to where it took him, and that was a point of conversion. He accepted Islam just on that point. So now this is what symbolizes you as a Muslim, identifies you as a Muslim. Now must you strip yourself from your identity as well? Is that fair on yourself that you strip yourself from your very identity? Now this is your identity. You need to be proud about your identity. I am Muslim. You need to be happy. You need to be thankful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that you have blessed me with Islam. So inshallah, with your grace, I will live as a Muslim. I will die as a Muslim. I won't feel embarrassed about my identity. No, I'm in a crowd now, so I don't want to say assalamu alaikum. In my childhood, I used to see some people were far, far away from Islam, very far away from Islam. But within them, they won't be even concerned about namaz. Maybe there's Jummah now and then, they would read the Jummah. But the Islamic identity, they were very particular about Eid, Bakra Eid, greeting each other with assalamu alaikum, wearing topi, sending the children to madrasa. There can be a whole crowd of Hindus and Christians, whatever. But they will greet each other, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, full assalamu alaikum. I used to hear personally, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Full. Whereas the whole crowd, at that time, I remember the 1960s, 1960-62, you won't find a single person wearing a topi. You won't find a single person wearing a topi. Kurta was far-fetched. Kurta, when it came out, 65-66, I still remember, then at the Eidgah, some people wore that long Arab kurtas and all that. And the Daily News, on the front page, they took photographs, the Arabs are here. Front, it was like a shock for them, people wearing kurtas. People were wearing kurtas then, about 65, 66. But before that, nobody wore kurtas. And the style then was, when you come out of the masjid, you take out your topi, put it in your back pocket. Look for a glass, where you can see your face and all that. You comb your hair. No beard. Most people didn't have beard at that time. You're combing, putting your hair right again and putting your comb back into the pocket. See? But this Islamic identity, you see, it's so important that nobody must confuse you as a Muslim. Whether you're at home, you're out of home, you're in the business, not in the business. See? Islamic identity. So one is the Islamic identity, and then what Islam stands for. At least that Muslim should have some degree of honesty. He must have some degree and some respect for honesty. Otherwise they will say, well, this topi and this clothing and all that is just a costume, it's a shirt or it's a topi, but people are no different. So you're wearing that topi, it must then impress upon you that I'm a Muslim, I need to behave differently. I need to conduct myself differently. I gave my word to someone, then I need to honor my word, then I can't turn away from my word. Whoever it was, whether it was a Muslim, whether it was a Hindu that I was dealing with, but I'm a Muslim, I'm wearing a Muslim clothing, wearing a topi, I'm wearing a kurta, and they recognize me as a Muslim. If I'm going to be dishonest, what will they think about Islam? If I'm dishonest, what will they think about Islam? But if I'm honest, then they will respect Islam. I'm wearing a topi and a turban and a kurta, and I'm going to a music festival. I'm talking of realities. I'm talking of genuine realities. You're going to a music festival. whatever kawali, but you're going into that. Now, what respect is left of the person? Now, that doesn't mean now that you want to go a kawali, now take off your topi, take off your beard, wear a shirt and then go. You wear these type of things, and then you scold yourself, you reprimand yourself that you're representing Islam. Then how can you ever betray Islam like this? How can you betray Islam? Are you a traitor? Then you need to live for Islam, you need to stand up for Islam, and your entire life must be a symbol of Islam. That's the minimum you could have done, that you symbolize Islam wherever you are, but you are a symbol of truth, you are a symbol of Islam. So what is this very important aspect that our Islamic symbols, wherever we are, especially when you are in a minority, then you need to preserve your identity. You are in a majority, then too you need to do it, but more when you are in the minority. You are here, how many percent you are? I'm sure we are less than 5%, right? In your life, less than 5%, then don't we need to preserve our identity? Wherever we're going, If we go into one town, for example, some Eastern Cape town, hardly any Muslim population, no Muslim population. You see some Muslim brothers, don't you feel a feeling of relief? Now, mashallah, he'll at least guide you to a masjid or a Jamaat Khana or to some halal food, some halal restaurant. He will at least be able to guide. Don't you feel a feeling of relief? But if everybody are dressed up in that Western culture, Western way, then how are you going to make out your brothers from your strange, from those that are strangers to you? How are you going to identify? But they wore the clothing, the identifying. Do you feel a feeling of relief? This is within your country. If you go to a foreign country, you feel so much relieved, right? You saw a group of brothers. They feel that you are part of them. You feel that you belong to them. It's a feeling of belonging. You extend some hospitality, some friendship. They also are courteous and loving towards you. Apart from that, it shows that you are one single brotherhood. Wherever you go, in whichever part of the world, you are united. You see, your dress is unifying you. Wherever you go, you're going to China or you're going to America, but your dress and it's unifying you. We're all one single brotherhood. Inna hadhi ummatukum ummatan wahida, that you are a single brotherhood. You are a single religion. You are a single dress, same ways, more or less, you are dressing up. So you belong to one single brotherhood, one path. See how important it is. مَن تَشَبَّهَ بِقَوْمٍ فَهُوَ مِنْهُمْ. You resemble a people, then you will be counted from amongst them. It's famous that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had blessed those magicians that came against Musa alayhi salam. The reason for Allah ta'ala blessing them was on that day of the challenge, they dressed up in the attire of Musa alayhi salam. They saw him to be a godly person perhaps. But whatever reason, but they dressed up in the attire of Musa alayhi salam. And Allah ta'ala says thereafter, okay, these people have adopted the clothing of my beloved. I can't deprive them of my mercy. They have adopted the clothing of my beloved, then I can't deprive them of my mercy. Therefore, the Buzurgan ad-Din say that even a person, he's not a proper Muslim, but he's wearing a Muslim attire, a kurta, etc., then to respect him. Whichever way, according to your capacity, according to your means, don't say, no, that he's just showing off and he's just putting up a front. We don't be judgmental. We can't have to help him materially. It doesn't mean that we don't show him respect. We respect him. Assalamu alaikum, how are you, whatever. Whichever way we can assist him, we'll assist him. But now, we become too quick in becoming judgmental, labeling people, oh, this person is like this and this person like this. Why should we go in that way? We show him the respect. The rest of it is left to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to guide him, or that he remains on misguidance. That's not our duty. Our duty was, he appeared to be a Muslim, we will show him the respect. The rest of it is left to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But that person will then feel, see, I'm dressed up like this and people are respecting me on account of this outer appearance. I need to rectify myself. If I'm wrong, then I need to correct myself. Okay? So you see the importance of it. Overall, the hadith says that you will be counted amongst them in this world and the next world, obviously, you'll be counted amongst them. One more time, Sabrina relates one incident of one person. All his life was just very humorous, you know, very light-hearted, very humorous. He lived like that, and as he neared his end, so he calls up his friend, said, aren't you my friend? Said, yeah. I'll ask you something, you will do it for me. Said, yes, I will do it for you. So he says, you know what, when I die, when you are burying me secretly, what you must do, take this whole packet of flour and sprinkle it on my beard. Let my hair, off my beard and my hair look completely white. So this friend reprimanded him, by the whole life you was in humor and laughter and all that, now you're dying like that also. You're acting like a clown now when you're dying. So hey, you just forget that now, you just do what I'm telling you. Didn't you promise me that you will follow this? Yeah, I'll do that. All right, I will do it. Somehow when he's burying him, perhaps it was night, there was not sufficient light then. Then he took all the flowers, smeared it nicely, properly, on his beard and on his hair. Anyway, now the interrogation starts off in the qabr. Mar Rabbuka. So they asked him in the qabr, but why did you do this? Why did you have to do this? So he says, see, I've heard that whoever resembles a people, he'll be counted amongst them. Now, my whole life was in gunas. My whole life was in guna. But the hadith says that Allah Ta'ala feels ashamed of a person, of a Muslim, whose hair has grown white in Islam. Allah Ta'ala feels ashamed of punishing a person whose hair, whose beard, etc. has grown white in Islam. So I thought to myself, that was the only chance I've got. At least I will appear as a Muslim, white-haired. Allah Pak will see this. I couldn't get the white hair. So at least I tried to imitate that old man. I tried to imitate that old man. Maybe Allah Ta'ala will have mercy upon me for that. On account of the Muslim, says that Allah Pak has forgiven him. Just to imitate. Imitate the Muslims. Imitate the people that you belong to. Don't feel ashamed that you belong to Islam, you belong to Muslim, you belong to the home of Islam. So the important thing is you move away from these areas. Just now one friend was here, very educated, very, very brilliant. So he had gone to America and he just came back about 3 months ago. So he says all these people came from Durban and all of them are lost. All of them are lost. Agnostics, nothing to do with religion. They don't want to talk about Islamic words also. Not even Islamic words. They don't want to identify with anything Islamic. Absolutely. They rather say something spiritual. You know, 2 months or 2 years ago, I had a heart attack that I became very spiritual. What do you mean by being spiritual? Now I became more conscious about doing humanitarian work, being compassionate towards people, all that. So they don't want to hear about Islam. They've gone so far away, so far, far away. See? So, what I'm getting at is you belong to a people, so remain with them. Without any proper reason, don't move away from them. Don't move away from their ways, from their culture, from their values, from their teachings. Don't move away unnecessarily. Allah Ta'ala, keep us in Islam and let us die with Islam. Therefore, the Mufassirin say under this verse that it is recommended that each day, as we starting off the day and we ending up the day, we say these words, Inna Salati wa Nusuki wa Mahyaya wa Mamati lillahi Rabbil Alameen, La Sharika lah wa Bidhalika wa Mirtu wa Ana Awwalul Muslimin. My prayer, my sacrifice, my living and my dying is for Allah Ta'ala, the Rabb of the worlds. Right? In other words, everything is for Allah Subhanahu wa Ta'ala. My living, my dying, my prayer, my whatever act of ibadat, but it's for Allah Subhanahu wa Ta'ala. So let's start off the day like that and let's end up the day. When it's for him, then let me dress up, let me at least behave in a way that Allah Ta'ala will say, no, at least you identified with my beloved. You didn't have much, but you identified with my beloved, so I will count you also for my beloved. You couldn't do much, you were a failure in many things, but at least you had the decency, you had a liking, you had a love for my beloved. So you had a love for my beloved, and I will count you from amongst them, although you don't deserve it. Allah Ta'ala grant us tawfiq. Thank you.